Former President Donald Trump was indicted today for trying to overturn his loss to Joe Biden.
We have to win in November, or we're not going to have Pennsylvania. They'll change the name. They're going to change the name of Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvanians have a unique role with democracy and freedom. We have seen Pennsylvanians rise up at the ballot box.
The work of making this world resemble one that you would prefer to live in is a lunch pail job.
Hi, and welcome to the Keystone Reckoning podcast. I'm Jesse White. For those of you who are regular listeners, you will have noticed that we did take a little break there for a little while, and that had a whole lot to do with the fact that I was in the middle of running a campaign, as the most political operatives are during that time of year, and that obviously demanded most of my attention. So I apologize for that. But as we're coming back now in a more regular way, I've given some serious thought to how I want to proceed. And what I've decided to do is kind of a split format where I'm going to do some regular, maybe daily, maybe several times a week, shorter podcasts like this one. They're going to clock in anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes. That'll primarily be just me. And then I'll have some of the longer form interviews and guest panels like I've had in the past. And the goal will be to do at least one of those a week. So we already have, I think, three people scheduled for the upcoming shows. And there's some really interesting topics that are going to talk about not just Pennsylvania politics, but also some of the science and mechanics and methodology of campaigning that I think is really important to help understand election results. It's hard to understand election results if you don't understand the election process. And I think by bringing people in that really understand that and know how it works, we can help people have a better understanding. So what I wanted to do today was talk about something that actually happened during this past election cycle that was a week and a day ago, back on November 2nd, where we had municipal elections here in Pennsylvania. And as has been widely reported, Democrats did not fare all that well. We did, upon a recount, looks like captured the Commonwealth Court seat for Lori Dumas. But other than that, it was very disappointing across the board. And, you know, there are various municipal races that are still being sorted out and things of that nature. But I wanted to talk about an experience that I had that directly related to the Keystone Reckoning Project and to share that, because I thought it was really informative about how and why Democrats do the way they do in municipal elections. So here's the story. As I had mentioned, one of the things that we wanted to do with donations that we received from listeners like you, which you can donate at KeystoneReckoning.com to the Political Action Committee, was to target races where it was really important that a Democrat do well, or it was really important that a Republican do poorly, and try to influence that. So in this cycle, we took some very baby steps. We did some very minimal things, and just to kind of test the waters and see, you know, how things were going to work. So one of the races that we looked at was a township commissioner race in Hampden Township in Cumberland County, right by where I live. And the reason that we chose that race was because there was a woman running by the name of Sherry Chippo, who was, by her own admission, a attendee and of the January 6th insurrection, which is just an odd thing to even say out loud. Not only was she an attendee, she also organized bus trips for other people to go. So she wasn't just someone that like happened to stumble on, you know, a bus thinking that she was going to Atlantic City for the day and wound up at an insurrection. She was involved, not with necessarily planning the event. I'm not going to give her that much credit, but she was definitely involved in wrangling people there and being an enthusiastic supporter. And the way she framed her attendance was that she was exercising her First Amendment rights. But okay, yes, you were, you know, that's like saying, you know, when you cause a 56 car pileup on the turnpike, you know, I was on my way to my grandmother's house. Well, both things can be true. You were on your way to your grandmother's house, but you also, you know, drove the wrong way off a on ramp and, you know, caused a 56 car pileup. So Sherry Chippo definitely fell into that category. So the question was, what do we do? How are we going to try to influence that race? And the interesting thing was, is that she was already a sitting township commissioner. She had been appointed to fill a vacancy when a previous member had passed away by the Republicans on the commission. And she was running for her actual first term as an elected official. And one of the things that we did was a robocall. And it was very simple. It was a robocall that called registered voters in the township and said, you know, be aware that Sherry Chippo is bad news. And what I'll actually do is I'll play it here in a few minutes. I'll drop the audio in so you can hear it.
Hi, I'm Nancy. Have you heard about Sherry Chippo, a candidate for Hampden Township Commissioner? Not only was Sherry Chippo in Washington, D.C. as part of the January 6th insurrection, she organized bus to the event. Regardless of your political party, we all agree that we need to keep traitorous insurrectionists like Sherry Chippo from ruining our community. The last thing we need is our own Marjorie Taylor Greene in Hampden Township. Say no to QAnon. Say no to anarchy. Say no to Sherry Chippo for Hampden Township Commissioner.
Paid for by the Keystone Reckoning Project, 717-288-1179.
So that was the audio. That was the robocall that went out about Sherry Chippo. As you can see, it was nothing overly dramatic. It was nothing, you know, it wasn't like we were saying bad things about her mother or anything like that. Although anybody that grows up to be an insurrectionist, I'm going to have a couple questions about their parentage, but that's a whole other issue. So the interesting part was that after the call went out, we got some pushback, which was fully expected. And, you know, that's part of the game. But it came from one of the Democratic candidates. And that was the part that was really interesting, because they were very, very critical of the call. And they went on Facebook and, you know, denounced it and called it slanderous and all those sorts of things. And by the way, just as an aside, do not throw the word slanderous around unless you know what it means. Slanderous is a statement that is absolutely untrue, and in a political context requires the person making the statement to know it was untrue, with what they call actual malice. So, you know, and I could get into more of this in a later episode, but the bar for slandering a political candidate is outrageously high. It's damn near impossible to do in real life. But as a kind of what they call a threshold issue, if it turns out that the statement was true or was an opinion, it's not slander, plain and simple. So anyway, this Democratic candidate got on and said it was slanderous. And to be perfectly honest, got fairly self-righteous and, you know, it said he didn't want to resort to name calling. And it, to me, if you want exhibit A as to why Democrats lose elections, like, that's it. That's the reason served up on a silver platter. Because if you're not willing to call out someone who is at the insurrection, if you're not willing to call them an insurrectionist, then you, quite frankly, probably shouldn't have your hat thrown into the arena. Because, you know, we're at a place now where Republicans, and it, and you saw it in this cycle, it's trickling down into local elections, is, you know, Republicans are unabashed. They are unashamed. They have no shame when it comes to this kind of thing. And you have somebody where there was an event that she was involved in that everybody understands that should have been an automatic disqualifier for holding public office. I mean, that should at least, let me put it this way, to you and me, it's an automatic disqualifier. But I would also say that for the voters, that's something they're going to want to know. Like, they deserve to know that. If I voted for somebody and then I found out afterwards that they were at the insurrection and no one bothered to tell me, I'm not blaming the person that was at the insurrection. I'm blaming the other side for not getting that information out. Because that's not dirty politics. That's not being, you know, inappropriate. That's like seriously important information that is going to tell you a whole lot about how this person is going to govern. You know, it is conduct that they undertook publicly. And it simply, there's no argument that you can make that it's not, should not be part of the conversation. just plain and simple. And it wasn't like we were talking about something that happened 30 years ago. I mean, this happened, 11 months ago. So it's relevant. It's valid. It should be vetted. The voter should have a chance to vet that. And like it or not, the responsibility for voters to know about it falls on the candidates. You know, it's great when there's a PAC that can come in and inform people, or there, you know, outside groups or whatever. But at the end of the day, if you are going to run for office, it is incumbent on you to make the argument as to why you are better suited than the other person. And that can be a combination of policy. It can be a combination. It can have to do with temperament. It can have to do with qualifications. Can be whatever whatever the ingredients are going into that particular stew for that election. And it's always going to be somewhat different. But if you can't draw a valid comparison between the insurrectionist and yourself, that's dangerous. And if you don't want to draw that comparison, that's just dumb. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That's just ridiculous. And, you know, this candidate actually messaged me and wanted to know about the call and about Keystone Reckoning Project. And, you know, and it was a mishmash of misinformation on their part. They said there was no disclaimer on the call. And, you know, I listened back to the audio. There clearly was, obviously, because they knew how to look up Keystone Reckoning Project. You know, everything was done legally. There was nothing suspect or shady about the call itself. Everything was done perfectly in accordance with the laws of the Commonwealth when it comes to that sort of political communication. And outside groups and PACs are, you know, they're more than welcome to engage in political debate. I mean, we do it all the time. So, but, you know, this person wanted to know why we did it. And basically the answer was, well, we did it because you didn't. Because what had happened was somebody, just a resident, had put up like 10 signs about her being at the insurrection the day before. This is like 2 days before the election. And this Sherry Chippo lost her mind, right? Like, she immediately put out this like big cover your ass statement and this whole bit. So it was clear that that was a pressure point that could have been exploited months ago. You know, they should have been on this back in September. And everybody that candidate talked to should have been saying, look, you know, the Sherry Chippo was at the insurrection and organized bus tours to get there, to get that word out. And judging by the reaction they had to the call that went out, it was fairly clear that they didn't tell anybody that because they didn't want to be mean. Their words, not mine. Yeah, they didn't want to be negative. And I'm sorry, that's not negative. I mean, it's negative that she was there. It's negative she organized bus trips, but it wasn't negative in the sense that talking about it is negative. You know, when someone engages in public conduct and then runs for office, that's exactly what we should be doing. If there's anything that voters should be using to make their determinations about who to vote for, judging based on public conduct of a political nature is kind of exactly the wheelhouse they should be in. But when you have Democrats who are saying, oh, no, that's mean. And there were other people in that community that were saying the same thing. And to be fair, there were other candidates and other people on the other side of the coin, on the Democratic side, that were saying, yes, this does need to get out there. We should have it out there. So it wasn't everybody. It was this one candidate and a couple of their supporters. And to me, that isn't a legitimate candidate for office. That's somebody that wants to put their name out there and be important, knowing they don't have a prayer, because they're lazy. They're not going to do the work. They're not going to do what it takes to get elected. And then whenever they don't win, they're going to martyr themselves and blame everybody else, which is kind of, you know, I think what you saw happen in this election. And I'm not going to say the candidate's name because I'm not trying to pick a fight with that person. That's not, it's over now. It doesn't matter. But the point is, when that all happened, you know, it was just like every red alert there was out there went off, because this is why we lose, you know. And yes, it was just a local township race, but this is how it starts. This is where, you know, we build our benches. And say what you want, Republicans are excellent at building a bench. Like, if you don't think that when that legislative seat becomes vacant, you know, that
Sherry Chippo isn't going to be throwing her hat in the ring, like, you're crazy. You're crazy. And the problem is, the longer you're in public service and in political life, and those things about your past aren't a part of your narrative and you're not vetted, you know, you weather those storms. And now she's going to build this narrative, and she now has, you know, 4 years or 6 years in as a township commissioner, you know, to alter that narrative. Whereas it could have been nipped in the bud. It could have been dealt with. So it's really not just about the short game. It's also about the long game, you know, keeping these people that are truly wackos, that are truly dangerous, by keeping them out of even the lowest level public offices, because that's where the seed gets planted. And if we can, you know, kind of kill it at the root, then, you know, to carry the metaphor further, if we can kill it at the root, then the fungus doesn't grow. Although I know fungus, well, I guess, does fungus have a root? That's neither here nor there. That's not the point. But the point is, you get the point, is that you got to stop this stuff up front. And it didn't happen in this case. And there are a lot of other places where it didn't happen. And this is where, you know, local Democratic groups and local Democratic candidates need to realize that they have to grow a spine. And, you know, I'm not saying that you have to go do massive opposition research and get, you know, get ugly and nasty and, you know, go after things that may be considered somewhat off base. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you need to, the stuff that's right out there, the lowest hanging fruit you could possibly get, you know, local candidate, you know, goes to insurrection, you know, plans bus tour. That's about as low hanging as the fruit gets. So you got to exploit that. That's your job. That's the responsibility you take on as a candidate. And to say that somehow you're too good for that, or you don't want to be mean, well, that's not the gig you signed up for. You have an obligation. And I think that what needs to happen is we look at some of these local Democratic committees all over the place, because I talk with Democrats statewide at all different levels, is I think that's something that needs to be talked about. And we do a lot of training about, you know, how to run for office, and you know, we're teaching people about knocking doors and this, that, and the other. And that's one that needs to happen. Those mechanics they're critically important, and you need to have that to energize your supporters and your volunteers, and to be able to do things in an orderly and in a way that can actually yield results. That stuff cannot be overlooked. But there's another part of it, and it's about having that killer instinct that Republicans have, and some Democrats have, but the Republicans by and large have it. If they're, you know, they're in it to win it. And you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on where you see that, you know, you have to question whether Democrats are in it to win it or not. You know, and it's local races like this one that are kind of a microcosm of that mindset. You know, why are you in the race? Are you in it, you know, because you like seeing your name on a sign? Or are you in it because you actually want to govern? And, you know, you can't govern if you don't win. And are you willing to do what it takes to win? And again, I'm not talking about anything crazy over the top. I'm talking about the bare minimum that a winning candidate needs to do in order to be successful. Because in a local municipal race, you can knock on every door more than once. You can lit drop. It's small enough that you can do mailings. You can do robocalls. You can do a ton of stuff. So there's really no excuse to not have the voters informed. You know, it's not like you're running a congressional race where it's hard just to get to everybody and, you know, it's hard to be drowned out. You know, you can talk to everybody or talk to enough people for it to matter. And I'd be willing to bet you, if you exit polled the people that voted in that Hampton Township race, the number of people that knew that Sherry Chippo had been to the January 6th insurrection and organized bus tours for others to go would be shockingly small. So what you're doing is allowing and encouraging an uninformed electorate. And an uninformed electorate is the wheelhouse where Republicans live. They live for uninformed voters that they can just feed mindless sound bites too, and use that to get elected. You see it over and over and over again. And the problem is, if we don't get our act together at these local levels, if we don't realize that something has to change, that we've got to step up our game and take these local elections seriously. And honestly, in some ways, I almost think it may run counter to conventional wisdom, but if you're going to have a candidate that's going to half-ass it as much as the candidate that I just, you know, that I'm talking about here in terms of doing what they need to do to win, and you know, they may be listening to this, and I don't want to hear, oh, you put out your message, you did this, you did. You know what? You lost. You lost, and you probably could have won had you made people aware of what was going on. Because, you know, if this woman was doing that, I'm sure there's a lot more out there that would have fit a narrative. And even if you do it in the form of a comparative, I'm not saying you have to ignore any of your positives. Of course, you should talk about your positives, but do it as a comparative. But if you don't give the voters a reason, not just to vote for you, but to vote against the other person, especially in a lot of these townships where you need crossover Republicans and independents, you know, and this would, Hampton would be one of those. You must have them. So you could get every Democrat to come out and vote for you, and you're still going to lose if you can't figure out a way to bring some of those Republicans and independents over to you. And the only way you're going to do that, really, on a scale that's going to matter, is by making them realize, and it's easy because if, you know, there, I'm sure there are moderate Republicans out there and independents who, upon hearing that, would say, you know what, that's a bridge too far. We don't need another Marjorie Taylor Greene in our town. That's just not what we're looking for. You could have done much better. And it is, you know, it is incumbent on you as the candidate to do better. And that didn't happen here. And I think that, again, this, you know, may go against conventional wisdom. Sometimes I think that no candidate can be better than a candidate that's not doing the job. Because the problem is, if the candidate doesn't do the job, the results reflect it. And then people look at those results and say, well, a Democrat can't win here because they have it in the past. But the problem is they're looking at flawed data. They're looking at, a half-assed campaign that yields a half-assed result. You know, and I think anybody that I've ever worked with at a campaign knows that, you know, I believe in going whole-assed or no-assed at all. So anyway, one of my little vignettes from this past election, I have more that I'm going to share that some are, I think, maybe somewhat controversial for some things I was involved in. Not me, not anything I did, just things that I witnessed and some other things that are happening. So we're gonna try this format. I'm at about 20 minutes, so I'm going to call it a day. And I'll be back hopefully tomorrow. And again, if you're interested in what we're doing here, please go to KeystoneReckoning.com. You can visit the Keystone Reckoning Project. We're also on all the social medias. You can check us out there. And obviously we want your donations because that's how we are able to build political power and get our message out there, which is exactly the kind of message that we're talking about here. So we, you know, at the end of the day, we want to win. We want Democrats to win, and we need your resources to help make that happen. So thank you very much. I will talk to you all very soon. This is Jesse White. Have a great day.
Well, that's it then. And we've saved people the trouble of voting. What's next?
Our point is that it's...
I understood the point. We're going to South Carolina to set up Illinois. When I ask what's next, it means I'm ready to move on to other things. So, what's next?
We're done.
Fantastic.